Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Women Tech Charge is sponsored by Huawei. 20 years connecting the UK.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of Women Tech Charge. My name is Amri Mafadon, and I am your host. And today, I am joined by Toby Oradane, who is founder and CEO of Black Ballad, whose goal is to empower every Black woman to change her world through every click she makes and every conversation she has. Welcome, Toby.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
It's pseudo surreal because I talk about Black Ballad all the time. So, but with everything that's been going on recently, one of my big kind of anti-racist things that I want people to do is to diversify what they consume. And Black Ballad is always number one on the list of like, just read something different from a different perspective so that you can just learn that there are different perspectives and people see things differently from how you might have. If we roll back, I guess, a little bit, you've always wanted to be a writer. Have you always wanted to be a lifestyle, women's lifestyle writer?
Always. My 11th or 12th birthday, my dad said, what do you want? I said, I want a subscription to Cosmo Girl. And he's like, what? He's like, what? And I was like, I want a subscription to Cosmo Girl. And he said to me, you have to explain why you want this. And I explained to him why I want this. And I said, you know, and if you do get me the subscription to Cosmo Girl, when we shop in Sainsbury's, I promise you won't find me in the magazine aisle anymore. I will follow you guys round. So I used to go and read all the women's magazines. I'd be standing there for like 40 minutes and I'd read everything. I got a subscription to Cosmo Girl when I was about 11 or 12. I was in like secondary school. And I remember I literally walked around the playground and literally have my head in like the magazine. Okay. And I was such a like neat. I would like copy the writing and like study the writing style. And then my dad was like, you want to be a journalist, right? He's like, but you've got to study as well. So I had to really balance like studying, and then on the weekends I would read a magazine and I would kind of practice headlines and sales and like writing styles. And I'd also think about what was wrong with these magazines, because even then I was like, nobody looks like me, but okay. And then I'd be like, oh, if I could do this. So this journey has started way before I think I was even conscious about it. So I have never, ever wanted to be anything but a woman's lifestyle writer. There's just something about the comfort of words in a magazine that is unexplainable to me. It feels like magic, and it's so geeky, I guess. But there's just something that I can't explain, how being kind of like brought up as an only child, the comfort I had in magazines. And I wanted to give that comfort to other people. It kept me company, it made me laugh, it made me cry some of the stories, and I wanted to create those feelings for other women. So there's never been anything else. It's been very specific from like day dot.
That's beautiful. It's evoking those emotions in others and a sense of support, which I've never ever heard a writer say that's why they want to be a writer. So did you study English or English lit or journalism, or what was your...
American studies.
American studies. Okay. Talk me through that one.
I did American studies at King's College, London.
Because?
And so my A-levels, my favourite book is The Colour Purple. And I studied the American Civil War. And I was very interested in race relations. And I was like, And I started reading around like America. And I was kind of like, they really take race seriously there. And there was all these questions that popped up in my head. And then I basically was like, I really like English, but we don't read anything about Black people. So this was my chance to go and read about Black people. So when I got to university, I picked all the African-American modules. And that was very, very influential in why I started Black Ballad as well, because language has developed so much in the past decade. I don't think, you know, we were as conscious about identity and community as we are now. And I would be studying like anything that would be, you know, whether it be like African-American like politics or history modules or English. And they had their own magazines. They had their own like educational institutions. There was a real culture there. And I was just kind of like, where is that in Britain? I didn't even know slavery existed in this country until I got to uni. And like kind of learning about the slave trade in America kind of put me on a path to kind of research what was happening in this country or happened in this country. So it was just my interest in race, again, at A-level that spurred the degree. And then from the degree spurred Black Ballad again in terms of where was this publication to kind of really tell our stories as Black women. There's triumphs and there are celebrations, but there's challenges. And I was like, where is this place? Because America really has it. They document their history, not just academically, but in their publications. And I think that was something that was very, very interesting to me and something I didn't feel that was here. And I hope that's what Black Ballad will do. It has documented the Black British female experience for the last 7 years. And I think that's really important.
I think the reason why we've got you here, the podcast is obviously called Women Tech Charge. But what I love about your story, I love about what you're doing is you're a writer who has used technology to kind of take charge of that problem that you identified, and you're using that to kind of document this, tell these stories, but make sure that there's a trace left, or make sure that there's artifacts left, or make sure that, you know, there's something that people can look back to, but you're in control of it. When we talk about history, or when we talk about the experiences that have gone before, there's nothing to say that Windrush happened, slavery happened, but lots of other things also happened as part of that experiment, or part of the history, even, sorry, not experiment, but anyone that's tried to archive it, anyone that's tried to put it down, either they've done it and because they weren't necessarily, didn't have the agency, didn't have the power, it's been kind of forgotten or it's been left behind, or people have proactively gone and kind of erased. There's been quite a big erasure of so many stories and so many things that have happened, which now you're able to use technology in the now to document it as it's happening. And it won't be erased this time, which I think is kind of the nicer, but it's technology being able to empower that. What were you doing that made you start Black Ballad? And what did you think you would be doing in this year of our Lord 2020?
I was a lifestyle journalist. I had worked in many women's publications and entertainment publications. And I had some very interesting experiences while I was a journalist. I think one of the most defining experiences I had was I was interning for a publication, I won't say which one, the year Whitney Houston died. And they did like a special tribute issue. And I was just looking through it. And bearing in mind, I was the only Black person in the office. They had a baby picture or a child picture of Whitney Houston. And I realized it was Oprah Winfrey. And I said to one of the editors, by the way, guys, like, you do know that's Oprah. I know it's been printed, but maybe you should get ahead and kind of apologize. And I kid you not, everyone was like, oh, she's got such an attitude. Oh, who does she think she is? And I literally wanted the floor to swallow me up. And I felt so silenced. I felt like I should never have said anything. I feel hot. Like, it was such a traumatic experience for me that the whole office was literally talking about how I had a nasty attitude, like I should know my place. And I remember being like, I don't want to feel like this. Like, I don't want to feel like this. And it wasn't done to embarrass anyone. It wasn't done for malicious intent. It was like, one, you're factually wrong and we're journalists, we should be better than this. And two, like, why not get ahead of the game? Why not say, like, we really messed up and we're apologizing? And that was when I think that was the first time I thought, I don't think I want to do journalism, but I don't think I want to be in these type of offices. I don't think I want to be doing that. So then I got a full-time job after that, and I was in the office for about a year and a half. It was slightly better, in a different publication. I made friends with the sub-editors in this like new full-time job who were like in their 50s and 60s. They were amazing. They took me under their wing. They really taught me about journalism and I was eager to learn. But my sort of like features desk, where it was kind of younger, like a younger table, again, being the only Black woman on the desk, no one really spoke to me. Like, I was most junior, and you could kind of tell that they kind of didn't want me there. I used to eat lunch by myself. In my breaks, I'd call my mum or I'd call my boyfriend and I'd just be like, yeah, like, I spent the whole day not talking to anybody. And like, I kind of was just like, okay, fine. Like, I kind of thought that's just what it was. Like, you're the new girl. And I didn't quite have the language to kind of articulate what was wrong. And then my contract came to an end and then I decided to freelance, but I wanted stability. I couldn't kind of secure a job. And I got really obsessive about it. I was applying for numerous jobs and then I was like, who's getting the jobs that I wanted? And I started tracking down who was getting these jobs. And everyone was kind of very thin, very white, and kind of like they looked very similar. And again, I didn't have the language to articulate why I wasn't getting these jobs in women's lifestyle magazines. But it dawned on me that I wasn't going to get those jobs. And I applied for one final job and I just said, enough is enough. And I was like, I know that I'm talented. I know that I'm creative. I've got a good mind. So I was like, why don't I just do something? And I'm super passionate about Black women. I was always talking about there's nothing for Black women, not in Britain. Like Ebony and Essence are amazing and I wish we had that. And I was like, there's nothing here that I think is for me as a Black millennial that kind of encompasses everything from careers to, you know, beauty, the whole spectrum of what it is to be a Black woman. And I was like, there's something here. I think I can do this. And I gathered all the my friends who I thought were super talented. I devised like a social media team, a writer's team, a sub-editor team. And I had like one of my friends was like the designer. And then I got the website made on the cheap. It was a WordPress template. And 8 months later, we launched. And I had no idea what I was going to be in for. I had no idea. I had no idea that so many other Black women wanted it. I was shocked. The first day we launched, I remember like friends were sending me messages and screenshots of their friends that they had either text or WhatsApp and was like, have you seen this new site? It's really good. And I was thinking, oh, people are just being nice. But that week, everyone kind of kept messaging me about it. And I was like, maybe this thing's going to work. Maybe it's all right. Maybe it's okay. And I thought, you know what? I'll have it on the side and then someone will employ me eventually. So I thought it was just going to be my side hustle. I didn't think it was going to be a fully fledged business that was going to end up employing people. I thought it was going to be my side hustle. And then I thought I'd be working at The Stylist or Marie Claire, yes, because like they would see that I'd done this amazing thing and they'd want to hire me. Do you know what I mean? And that didn't happen.
I want to go. So you're saying it still hasn't happened, because I want to go into that a little bit, because I think there is something of actually, you know, you seeing that it worked well and you having that audience and you being a writer that's built something up like that, we could almost kind of say the same thing again, right? If we look at the kind of acquihires or the acquisitions that other people have made of other platforms, if you did look like one of those people that was getting those jobs, it's possible that they would have still come and kind of knocked on your door and come to do something, but that's still not something that's necessarily happened.
No, so I was able to be a freelancer, but I never got a job like in the office. So I was still kept on the outskirts. That's why I always say that I kind of failed at that whole thing of getting a job in journalism, because I never did. I never achieved it. I never got the job that I thought I was destined to get, that I grew up wanting. I've never wanted to do anything but be a journalist.
But then you created the perfect job for you.
Failing in getting that job was probably the best thing that ever happened to me, because I'd never be sitting here.
Women Tech Charge is sponsored by Huawei. 20 years connecting the UK.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
So you are founder and CEO of Black Ballad. What's the kind of longer elevator pitch for Black Ballad at the moment? Because I know you've just kind of refreshed things.
We see ourselves as a media and data company for Black women. And that kind of evolved naturally. Of course, you know, the media element is from my career as a journalist, being in women's lifestyle and not seeing myself or my friends who are Black in the pages and in the offices. And then I think when we were writing articles, I had a big push of quality journalism. I didn't want 800 word opinion pieces and that's it. I kind of wanted our journalism to be up there, that was kind of going towards like New York Times and investigations, and that also had real emotion. So to do that, you kind of need to do research, right? You need to kind of find stats if you're kind of doing some investigations. And one of the first investigative pieces we did was about the Black experience in higher education. And that was just from a student's perspective and like lecturer's perspectives. And that was done in, I think, about 2014-15. And the person I commissioned to write it couldn't find any real stats about the challenges that Black students face in the UK, or how many kind of lecturers there were in the UK, Black lecturers in the UK kind of university scene. It was really hard to find those stats. And I thought, this shouldn't be that hard, right? And like, she kind of had to kept referring to like American stats, or we kind of had to do like British stats that encompassed everybody. So from then on, it was, how can we be a great platform and run quality journalism when we don't even have statistics that kind of makes our journalism more meatier? So that was what I was thinking about. And then in 2020, the year we are in now, my co-founder and I had been thinking about, how do we do data? Like, how do we find out statistics that are really important to making sure that the Black community in Britain and beyond, even in Europe, can thrive? Because numbers don't lie, and people say, you know, you're a little bit emotional about that issue, do you not think? Or is it really like that? Sometimes you just need numbers to really back you up. So in 2020, we won a grant from the Membership Puzzle Project in America to look at a particular issue about the Black community. And we did Black motherhood. And that was our chance to collect data. So we ran a survey, and we surveyed over 2,500 Black women. And that was when we said, we found out so many things about Black women's journeys through pregnancy and motherhood. And we were just kind of looking at each other as this small three-person team and just thinking, what else don't we know about the Black woman's experience in Britain and in Europe? What else don't we know?
And who should have got that? I think that's the thing that is always alarming with so many of these discussions, so much of these statistics is, so Nicola Rollock did a little bit of research kind of last year, before. There are only 25 Black female professors across the whole of the UK. And it's always, for me, it's always alarming. And this is kind of on the Black female experiences, on the Black experiences, even on the women's experiences, how little of this we've got charted, how little of this we've got measured, how little of this we've gathered. And something like female professors, you know, they're in institutions, they're part of what is there. So how is that not a stat that we've been able to access? But like you're saying, therefore, there's so many more things that we should be measuring that we've not even got the basics ready to then be able to say, actually, even if it's, you know, pregnancy or some of the things that you're mentioning, these are the nuances. We want to get beyond just the first stage.
100%. 100%. So when we did the survey, we was like, yeah, okay, like let's be forthright with the data. Let's kind of think about how we're going to gather this data, the good we're going to do with this data, and I guess how we're going to distribute this data, because there's so many people that we want to know about this data. I think the Black community and Black women in particular want to know about this data. I think it could help academics. I think it could help society in general. So as well as the media being a really important part and the heart of Black Ballad, now we are a data company. We are a company that is driven to collect data on the Black women's experience, not just to better the products that we provide, but to hopefully better the Black community's experience in Britain and beyond.
Mm. And so for you, when you started, so kind of you've spoken about how you got to the data side. For you, you started off with it as a media platform. And what has your tech journey been like?
I'm forever indebted to technology. It lowered the barriers for me to be able to start a publication. And I think that's where technology has played the most important part in my journey personally. You know, I come from a working class background. I would never have been able to afford the materials to create a print publication. The PR. We created like a mini video that we put snippets on Instagram and Twitter, and like to have that sort of campaign for print, it would have run in the thousands, and I would never have had that money. But technology really lowered the barriers and kind of made a more even playing field for people like me. I think the other thing for me, technology has kind of been able to build communities. And I think that's how I best use technology in my job, is that I've been able to build a community of Black women and build this space that is safe and is non-judgmental. And I think speak about things that we speak about between, you know, in our family households, maybe one, two friends, but beyond that. So I'm forever indebted to technology and how it has been able to create Black Ballad.
I think the other thing that I've always really appreciated about Black Ballad and what you're trying to do is that if we go back to that whole documentation side of things, and I think it's kind of testament to you wanting to kind of go deep on your community and kind of fully understand them, that you've actively, proactively gone, you know, I think you've just launched the editors across the Southwest, but you're like, we've got editors across, we've got the funding for this, we're investing in those Black women outside of London, which I think is also a very new thing.
Yeah, I think I've always been conscious that Black Ballad can't afford to repeat the mistakes of mainstream media. There can't just be one dominant voice and that be the Black London voice. And that's just been something I've always been kind of anxious about, like, oh, I don't want to repeat that mistake. And then, you know, our editor, Jandela Benson, who came on board full time this year, she'd been working as our commissioning editor. It was a conversation that we just kept talking about. And Jandela is actually from Birmingham. And she now lives in London with her family. And I think just having that insight from her about life growing up in, you know, being Black and Birmingham, you know, she was the only Black girl in her class. Whereas, you know, I've been born and bred in East London. The majority of my teachers were Black in school. We were just constantly talking about it. And this opportunity came about. And we pitched this idea to Nesta and we won £70,000. And we literally said, you know, we're not even going to commission the stories because I don't know what it's like to be a Black woman from Scotland. I don't know what it's going to be like to be a Black woman who's in Cornwall. So why don't we empower, you know, 9 editors across Britain to commission other Black women to write these stories? And I think it was really important for us to give power to other Black women, not just bring them on as writers and then we kind of edit their work, like to put them in powerful positions so they was actually actively making decisions on the content. And I've been blown away by the content. There's some histories that there's real history in there. Like, it's a 9-week takeover and it's not just going to be like 9 weeks then we stop. We're going to make sure we have editorial policies in place and, you know, constantly seek out these stories so that it just becomes a natural part. So when you're reading Black Ballad, if you're reading about something from, you know, a Black woman in Bolton, it should be like, it shouldn't even be strange to you anymore. It'll be like, oh, okay, that was really cool. Like, yeah, I really needed to read that. So yeah, we've just been proactive in that. And I think that was it for me. I had to look at Black Ballad and just be honest with myself and say, like, it just wasn't good enough. And I think it's really important for you to critique your business. I think it's really important for you to critique your team and not critique it in a nasty way, but critique it in a proactive way and be like, okay, this is the problem, but how can we get better?
There's so much that you've been able to achieve with Black Ballad so far. There's so much that I know you've got on your kind of OKRs, your kind of objectives, your visions, whatever, for kind of next year, 5 years. I think, what's the end goal? What's the end game with this? What is your kind of big picture? What should be different? You know, is it that you're wanting to build this powerhouse media conglomerate that becomes the go-to for kind of anyone that wants to be a journalist? Is it that you're trying to build kind of alumni to then seed across so that, you know, all the spaces that you weren't allowed into, those people will not only be allowed there, but will be thriving there and be running those spaces? What is the kind of, is it more on the data side and just actually just mapping life and the experiences we have? What's the big picture, big ticket? How will you know that you have A, finished and B, done a good job?
That's a question and a half. I've asked that question myself. Like, when will I know that when will I know that I've done my part? For me, I believe that Black Ballad can really be the leading publication for Black women in Britain and across Europe and in certain, I guess, where we're the diaspora. So I think, like, where is the publication for Black women in Australia and New Zealand? Like, where is it? Like, you know, you have the African-American voice, which I think is very pronounced and it's loud and it's clear. And I think our voice is clear and I think it's pronounced, but it's just not loud. I think, like, you know, those of us that kind of have our heritage country, but we exist in, you know, Western countries, you know, I want to magnify those voices, not just in Britain, but as I said, for me, it's Europe, it's Australia. I want us to be the number one media company in those countries and continents. Data is super important. It's about making sure our data documents the Black female experience, especially across Europe. I want to get to a place, you know what, I think I'll know when I'm done, where not only we've conquered Europe, but when people start writing academic texts and books on the Black experience and they're not referencing America, they're not referencing African Americans, when there's enough rich data, and not just like quantitative data, but qualitative data through these stories that we've done, to make great academic texts and to make great books, whether they be nonfiction or fiction, that's when I think I'll be able to be like, yeah, I think we've done a good job. I think that's it. So our experience in Britain is so rich, and I just think it just deserves a platform. I just think it deserves to be documented a little better.
Mm-mm, it does. Hear, hear. Thank you so much, Toby. I wish you well. I know you'll achieve all of that and much, much more. So thank you very much. Thank you for being a woman who took charge, and thanks for being.
Thank you for having me. It's one of my favorite podcasts. So thank you.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.